Today is Tuesday, August 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, a bridge over an industrial area in Italy collapsed during a sudden and violent storm. Police in London arrest a man in his 20s after driving his car into pedestrians.
The volume of the crash was so loud that it sounded like he must have been doing some speed, and on a roundabout you generally go slower, so it seemed to be like it was probably intentional.
Plus, North Korea has repeated the call for a declaration formally ending the Korean War and an outpouring of support for the ailing Queen of Seoul. It's all ahead on today's International Edition. A bridge over an industrial area in the Italian city of Genoa partially collapsed during a sudden and violent storm on Tuesday. It left several vehicles crushed in the rubble below. Joining me on the phone from Italy is reporter Sabina Castelfranco. Thank you so much for joining today's International Edition.
My pleasure.
There have been a number of reports of both vehicles being crushed by the bridge and a number of fatalities. What has been confirmed by authorities thus far?
Thus far, the Italian Deputy Transport Minister, who's actually in Genoa already, confirmed to Sky News 24 that 22 people are dead and at least 13 injured that have been taken to the nearby hospitals. So those are the numbers at present, although highly likely that the death toll will rise. A number of people are reported missing, and what we do know, or what the authorities have said, is that there were at least 30 vehicles that were on the bridge when the disaster occurred. And of course, these many of these cars and trucks crashed down and then fell down some 50 meters and were crushed by the concrete pillars and concrete chunks of the actual bridge. This was a highway bridge that ran over an industrial area. It also ran over a river.
Have there been any kind of discussions as to understanding why this took place? I mean, I understand it was some sort of sudden storm, but has anything been made clearer?
Yes, there was a huge thunderstorm going on, and there were witnesses who said that the bridge was struck by lightning just before it crashed down. Others said that the winds were blowing very strong and you could see that the bridge was slightly moving. Then there have been other reports of possible maintenance or some work, but this has not been confirmed by the authorities.
Firefighters told the Associated Press that they were worried about gas lines exploding in the area from the collapse. What have authorities said about their rescue efforts?
Well, they have dispatched hundreds of firefighters, rescue workers, emergency operators, ambulances, trucks, you know, to help with removing some of the rubble. You know, anything could happen, but what the authorities have confirmed, and in particular the Civil Defense Department, press conference was given not so long ago, and a special commission has been established to coordinate all efforts to help find any survivors in the rubble. And many government officials have already said that such a tragedy is no longer acceptable in this country and that much more needs to be done to ensure that big structures undergo the needed maintenance work.
Sabina Castelfranco is a reporter in Italy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Among other top stories, Congo's latest deadly Ebola outbreak has spread into a neighboring province as health workers begin using experimental treatment for the disease. So far, there have been 30 confirmed cases, including 14 deaths. Portugal has become the first European country to say it would take in some of the 141 migrants aboard the rescue ship Aquarius. Defense attorneys for Paul Manafort rested their case Tuesday without calling any witnesses or having the former Trump campaign chairman testify in the trial where he's accused of bank and tax fraud. Tesla's board named a special committee to evaluate the possibility of taking the electric car maker private. For expanded coverage of these stories and more, are at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Homo erectus is a primitive hominid species that is said to have lived between about 2 million and 143,000 years ago. This early human relative is said to be the first hominid species to migrate from Africa. But like other archaic human relatives, Homo erectus became extinct. A team of scientists led by the Australian National University say they found evidence that one reason why this species came to an end was because, in essence, they were lazy. The scientists who studied material found in archaeological excavations that date back to the early Stone Age say they found indications that Homo erectus really didn't put that much effort into their tool making and how they collected resources. They say that these archaic people seemingly looked for the easiest way to do things that were key to their survival. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. A man was arrested after a car collided with security barriers outside London's Parliament building and a number of pedestrians were injured. Joining me on the phone is London-based reporter Amy Gutman. Amy, can you take us through the events that took place this morning as best we know them?
Steve, about 7:30 this morning, a man drove his car into cyclists and pedestrians outside the Houses of Parliament. Now, this was the start of the commuter hour, though it's mid-August, so it's important to bear in mind that typically busy areas are much quieter than normal. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there were still plenty of people around. Also, it's important to note that Parliament is on summer break until September, so there wasn't the usual busyness that you would find around the Houses of Parliament there either. However, this is a very busy area for tourists, obviously, because of the Houses of Parliament, because of Westminster Abbey and Big Ben, which are all anchored right there at Westminster.
Now, there were some reports of at least two individuals being injured by the attack. What do we know about those victims?
We know very little. We know that two were taken to the hospital. One has already been released, and the other is currently still being treated for non-life-threatening injury.
And as far as, authorities, they have said that they are treating this as a terrorist incident, and one person has been arrested. What do we know about the alleged perpetrator?
We know very little about the alleged perpetrator, and that's largely because he's been refusing to cooperate with police since he's been apprehended. However, they have been able to identify him. In fact, he's known to local police in his area. They believe he's from the Midlands. That's an area 2 or 3 hours north of London. They know he's a man in his 20s, but they don't know very much more. So they don't know whether the car was borrowed, stolen, or belonged to him. They know that there were several previous owners, so it's obviously a used car. But again, whether the car was registered to him is not yet known. They will know his name, of course. They haven't released that yet. He was not on the radar of security services for the UK, but again, he was known to local police.
Now, police initially cordoned off some of the area around where the attack took place. Some of those cordons have been lifted, but how else is the government responding?
The government is responding as it usually does with these kinds of attacks, and that is with what's called a COBRA meeting. So COBRA is essentially an emergency response committee made up of ministers, police, intelligence officers, civil servants, and also very high-ranking lawyers and advisors to the Prime Minister. They'll all be meeting at Whitehall, which is a government building, to figure out whether they need to raise the threat levels, whether they can expect further attacks, all of these kinds of inner workings of the government once an attack has happened, how to respond, and again, just how secure they need to make the nation. That meeting is currently still ongoing. Police have also told people to avoid the Westminster area. They had previously closed the tube station and several side streets, but cordons are now being lifted. Of course, that hasn't stopped tourists from continuing to snap selfies of themselves, even in front of these barriers.
Amy Gutman is a reporter based out of London. Thank you so much for joining today's program.
Thank you.
Afghan officials say they've sent special forces backed by U.S. advisors and airstrikes to the city of Ghazni, where clashes with Taliban fighters have left hundreds of people dead over days of fighting. Reuters' Ryan Brooks has more.
The Afghan Taliban said they're in control of most of the city of Ghazni on Monday after 4 days of fighting. Hundreds of people have been killed or wounded in the clashes. Diplomats in the capital, Kabul, tell Reuters the government says they were surprised when the attack began late last week. Ghazni is a strategic center on the highway that links Kabul to the country's south. People fleeing Ghazni have described bodies in the streets, while aid groups say hospitals are struggling to take in the wounded. The Taliban siege is a blow to President Ashraf Ghani weeks before a parliamentary election that dashes hopes the two sides could begin peace talks. On Monday, after days of silence, Ghani said on Twitter that reinforcements would be sent to the city, and the defense minister said special forces had been dispatched.
Our message to the people of Afghanistan, and especially for Ghazni residents, is that Afghan security forces are ready to defend their people and country at any time by accepting sacrifices on the battlefield.
Officials say U.S. forces are on the ground helping to coordinate airstrikes. The U.S. military said it's launched at least 24 of them since Friday. While the government said the situation had improved by mid-Monday, the Taliban claimed they still control much of the city. It all adds to tension ahead of October's election and raises questions over the threat posed by the Taliban and other armed insurgents. While the fight raged in Ghazni, a suicide bomber in Kabul set off a deadly blast near a crowd of protesters at the election commission. Officials say at least one police officer was killed and another was wounded.
That was Reuters reporter Ryan Brooks. North Korea has repeated the call for a declaration formally ending the Korean War as a way to foster mutual trust. Pyongyang called this a requirement and said it was necessary for progress on denuclearization. According to South Korea's Yonhap News Agency, North Korea's state-run publication, the Tongil Shinbo, said that the United States should take a practical measure to implement what was agreed to on June 12th in Singapore between North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump. The paper also warned South Korea that continued sanctions and improving relations are incompatible. Monday's commentary followed the agreement between the Koreas for their leaders to meet for a third time this year. That meeting is to take place sometime in September in Pyongyang. The demands by North Korea are no surprise to analyst Harry Kazianis, the director of defense studies at the Center for the National Interest. He told VOA's Victor Beatty the planned Korean summit comes at a time when the pace toward denuclearization has stalled.
Seems like the North Koreans want a lot of concessions up front before they're willing to really even talk about denuclearization, whereas the Trump administration, their starting point in negotiations was what everybody was calling a few months ago CBID. In other words, the complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of North Korea. So it's very clear that Washington and Pyongyang are basically on two very opposite ends of the spectrum. And I think what South Korea is trying to do here is trying to bridge the gap. I don't know if that's going to happen, but we're going to find out pretty soon.
Who wants this meeting more, North or South Korea, or is it mutual?
I think it's mutual. I think for Moon in South Korea, you know, his popularity has dipped a little bit. The economy is starting to have a little bit of problems. For Kim Jong-un, I think it's pretty obvious that he really wants to get South Korean investment. He's looking to try and build his legacy, and he's also trying to legitimize himself in the international arena. So for both Korean leaders, I think it's obvious the reasons why they would want to meet again.
The two at their April meeting, their first summit, agreed to push for a declaration of an end to the Korean conflict, but Ambassador Harry Harris said that would be premature at this point.
You know, I don't understand the rub why so many people are against some sort of formal declaration in the Korean War. The war is over. So it's the equivalent of everybody arguing if the sky is blue. Everybody knows the sky is blue, and it's just people view it as some sort of concession on America or Seoul's part, saying that the war is over. I think that's a good thing. I think it wouldn't be a bad idea if President Moon, Donald Trump, or Kim Jong-un maybe even met, you know, at this potential third Korean summit and ended the war. I think that would be a good way to test North Korea's intentions, because quite frankly, for many years, that has been something they have been asking for. I don't think there's any harm in doing that. And I think at that point, you could honestly go to Kim Jong-un and say, look, we've given you three meetings with Mike Pompeo. We've given you a summit with Donald Trump. Now we're ending the Korean War. where's your turn in terms of doing what you said you would do and work towards denuclearization? If at that point they still won't talk about denuclearization, I think not only you have the international community on your side to contain North Korea, you have really the entire world on Donald Trump's side. So I think this is something that we can do.
Are you surprised at the lack of forward motion on denuclearization?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, the North Koreans have been very clear in a lot of their public statements that denuclearization is almost an aspirational goal for them. The things they want up front before they were denuclearized that they've said in sometimes in very full-throated ways, in some ways sort of vaguely, is that they want the Korean War to be ended. They want to see some of the sanctions removed. You know, they're looking to be legitimized in the international arena as a legitimate nation.
Yonhap News also reports that a South Korean advance team is heading to North Korea this week to inspect preparations for the August 20th to 26th planned family reunions involving 100 people from each side who have been separated since the armistice was signed ending the 1950 to 1953 Korean War. This is International Edition.
Come celebrate the 60th birthday of legendary queen of pop, Madonna, on Thursday, August 16th, with a very special edition of Border Crossings. Join Larry London as he takes you back through time with a full hour of Madonna's greatest hits. With a career spanning over 35 years, Madonna has given us plenty of songs to choose from. Don't miss Border Crossings on Thursday, August 16th at 1500 Universal, as we pay tribute to one of the greatest pop stars of all time.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, fresh off a two-nation Africa visit to Zimbabwe and Malawi, Shaka Sali talks about the fascinating people he met and the challenges he encountered reporting on democracy in Africa. On the road with Shaka on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
From the Voice of America, this is International Edition. Japan's emperor will take part in an annual memorial ceremony honoring war dead on Wednesday. Reuters' Grace Lee reports it will be the last time Akihito will do so as reigning emperor.
Actions speak louder than words when it comes to Japanese Emperor Akihito. For three decades, he's visited countless war memorials across Asia and beyond, seeking to heal the wounds of a war waged in his father's name. But Akihito is set to abdicate the throne next year, and on Wednesday, he'll honor the war dead for the last time as reigning emperor, on the anniversary of Japan's World War II surrender.
In my mind, more specifically, the first thing he did was to console the soul of the war dead.
In an exclusive interview, former senior aide Makoto Watanabe told Reuters he's seen firsthand Akihito's push for reconciliation.
Because of his thoughts that the facts are facts, truth are truth, and you always have to look for truth. He's in a way a scientist in that sense.
In June 2005, 60 years after a bloody World War II battle, Akihito and his wife stood, heads bowed, at a seaside cliff on Saipan. They paid their respects at memorials, not only for Japanese, but also for American and Korean war dead. Though politicians have sometimes undercut official apologies, Akihito's message has remained consistent.
He has really made it his business to expand the role of the emperor in all sorts of ways, but in terms of addressing history issues and what he thinks was the unresolved and lingering legacies of his father's reign.
When Akihito steps down next year, he'll be the first Japanese emperor to abdicate in two centuries. However, his decades of work leaves behind a promising legacy. His heir, Prince Naruhito, holds similar views about teaching the tragedies of war.
That was Reuters reporter Grace Lee. Aretha Franklin is known throughout the music industry as the Queen of Soul. A person close to Franklin, who spoke on the condition of anonymity because the person was not allowed to publicly talk about the topic, told the Associated Press on Monday that the singer is seriously ill and provided no additional details. As the news has spread, so did an outpouring of support and musical tributes. AP Entertainment editor Oscar Wells Gabriel reports.
You might think it was fate that brought Beyoncé to Aretha Franklin's own backyard, Detroit, last night, but there she was at Ford Field performing with her husband Jay-Z as part of their summer tour. The expressions of support for Franklin began well before the headliners took the stage. DJ Khaled hyped the crowd by playing one of Aretha's biggest hits, Respect. The Detroit Free Press reports that during the show, Beyoncé dedicated her performance to Franklin and expressed thanks to her for the beautiful music she has done during her career. The show came the same day a source close to Franklin told the Associated Press that the singer is seriously ill. Perhaps Missy Elliott put it best when she wrote on Twitter that it's important to give props to iconic performers while they are still here with us. She says Aretha Franklin certainly deserves such praise for giving us decades of timeless music. Mariah Carey also expressed concern in the wake of news that the Queen of Soul is ailing, saying that she is praying for Franklin to recover. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
Before I go today, on this day, back in 1900, international forces, including U.S. Marines, entered Beijing to put down the Boxer Rebellion. Now, a Chinese organization called the Yiho Chuan, or the Society for the Righteous and Harmonious Fist, led the uprising in the northern part of China against the spread of Western and Japanese influence. That movement had between somewhere of 50,000 and 100,000 members. The rebels were referred to by Westerners as Boxers. This was because they performed physical exercises, a special kind of Chinese martial arts that some call Chinese boxing. The Boxers killed foreigners, Chinese Christians, and destroyed foreign property. The uprising ended in 1901 with the Boxer Protocol. And that is going to do it for today's International Edition. Patrice Martin directed the program, and Nashwan Kale engineered the broadcast. But before I go today, I would like to thank you for taking time out of your day to join us. Now, to keep up with the latest pictures, video stories, and more, be sure to follow The Voice of America on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a terrific Tuesday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Religious freedom is under threat in many parts of the world today. Indeed, a stunning 83% of the world's population live in nations where religious freedom is either threatened or even banned, said Vice President Mike Pence in a speech at the Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom. The victims of religious persecution face economic sanctions. They're often arrested and imprisoned. They're the target of mob violence and state-sanctioned terror. And all too often, those whose beliefs run counter to their rulers face not just persecution, but death, warned Mr. Pence. The list of religious freedom violators is long, he said. Their crimes and oppressions span the width of our world. In the Western Hemisphere, the Nicaraguan government of Daniel Ortega is virtually waging war on the Catholic Church, said Vice President Pence. For months, Nicaragua's bishops have sought to broker a national dialogue following pro-democracy protests that swept through the country earlier this year. But government-backed mobs armed with machetes and even heavy weapons have attacked parishes and church properties, and bishops and priests have been physically assaulted by the police. Father Raul Zamora is the pastor of Divine Mercy Church and is a hero of the faith, said Mr. Pence. Recently, the Ortega government laid siege to his church after more than 200 students sought shelter there and two students lost their lives. They joined the more than 350 courageous Nicaraguans who've died for the cause of freedom this year alone. Speaking to Father Zamora and the Nicaraguan people, Vice President Pence said, "Our prayers are with you, and the people of America stand with you for freedom of religion and freedom in Nicaragua."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237 USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.